Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by The Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here on Money, Riches, and Wealth. The last Wednesday of 2018. The last Money, Riches, and Wealth for 2018. And I'll tell you, has it been a December or has it been a December unlike any before? Normally, December is one of the best months of the year. And the beginning of the month from up until Monday was depressing, to say the least. You know, I think it was one of the biggest down moves ever recorded in the history of December. And then Christmas Eve was a day that 97% of the time Christmas Eve is an up move because there's really nobody around to trade. And yet this Christmas Eve turned out to be the worst Christmas Eve ever. And then, boom, the day after Christmas comes in and you get the largest ever point move in the Dow Jones Industrial. I don't get too excited about that. It's still only a 5% move. The Dow has made moves of 10% in a single day. Even the highest percentage recorded move ever in the Dow was 15% back in 1933. But that can happen easily when you're at 75, I think it was, on the Dow Jones Industrial Average back in 1933, when it made that 15% move. When you're at 20-some thousand, it takes a lot more to move the market in those kind of percentages, point move, when you're up at 20-some thousand. And so today was the previous high in the market move was about 980 points, and today surpassed that to 1,086, now the largest point move ever in the Dow. On the upside, there was actually a larger downside move at one time. I think it was 1,100, something in that ballpark. But for upside moves today, is the top. And, it's interesting. I sent out an alert to clients on Monday, and we talked about the concept that computer-driven algorithms were what was driving these markets today, these markets over the last few weeks. And I'll explain that more in a second. And then I, basically was saying to my staff, when it ends, you're going to have a boomerang move back on the upside, because that's what happens. When these computer algorithms operate, when they stop operating, and they're trying to move the market downward, but when they exhaust their momentum, you get a boomerang reaction back the other way. And so that's what happened today. I didn't expect it as quickly as this, but, that's what happened today. So anyway, I'm on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. I'm all alone tonight. I'm by myself here on the last Wednesday of 2018 with Money, Riches, and Wealth. So I'd appreciate to hear from you so that I have somebody to talk to and answer your questions, which is what I enjoy doing, demonstrating what true professional financial advising should be, the ability to converse and help people on any topic dealing with their personal finances, being it Social Security or being Medicare or retirement plan. Planning or IRAs or 401ks or income tax planning or estate planning or insurances, auto, home, life, long-term care. Whatever the question might be, if it deals with your personal finances and deals with your money, we're here to answer your questions. And as I say, it's to demonstrate what a true professional financial advisor does. You know, our firm is a fee-only financial advisory firm. We don't sell products. We don't take commissions. We don't take referral fees. We work on the power of our advice. And that's what we believe all true professional advisors should do, is try try to be as independent as possible, comprehensive, like doctors of personal finance. You go to your personal physician, you don't want them to be non-credentialed, non-educated, and selling product to you, prescriptions that they get commissions on and so forth, or prescribing medical procedures that they get commissions on and so forth. So anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Those who call in now get the most time. We're going to Steve in White Marsh. Steve, how can I help you?
Question. In the long term, what's best to maximize, your simple plan or your Roth IRA, as in we have a small business? If I know you could say simple to match you to that amount, but at the end of the year.
Well, keep in mind you could do both or a combination of the two, right? You already have a simple IRA.
If I have $5,000 left, say, would it be better to put it in a simple or the IRA?
Okay, so let me just start. You have a simple IRA at your company, right?
Yes.
Do you make over $100,000, under $100,000? Married or single?
Single, under $100,000.
Under $100,000. Well, then you should definitely do the Roth. There's no doubt about it, because simple IRA doesn't allow you to do Roth contributions. It only allows you to do pre-tax contributions. And if you're single, making less than $100,000, you're probably going to find in the long run, I'm hearing in your voice that you're not that old either.
No, that's why I asked.
Okay, so you should definitely be doing the Roth, because let me tell you something. If the next election, the other political party gets into power, they are hell-bent on making sure our taxes are significantly higher, and that's the key to the Roth IRA.
And my argument is I'd rather pay taxes today than 20 years from now.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. So use the Roth, use the simple IRA to get your match and those kind of things, but use your Roth IRA as much as you possibly can. All right?
Okay.
All right, buddy. Good decision. Thanks. Bye. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. There's one caller online. Before I have to go take a pause, they're going to have to hold with me. Hope that they will. And we got to go to traffic real quick, and then we're going to be back. But if you want to call in and get your question answered and direct the conversation tonight, and I'm here all alone, I really need your help. 410-922-6680. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you and your family can trust and count on for the rest of your life? The Financial Consulate, being fee only, is unable to take commissions or referral fees. We are independent of stockbrokers and insurance companies and work solely as a fiduciary in your best interest. These are the key ingredients of a professional financial advisor. If you've been wanting a second opinion, then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com to learn more. That is financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is the last show of 2018 of Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're on an open show, and I am actually all by myself tonight. So I'm asking for your help to call in, ask your question about personal finance, anything to do with personal finance, be the income taxes, Social Security, Medicare, IRAs, 401k. Steve called in about how to, you know, does he do Roth or does he do pre-tax and so forth. Lots of great questions like that. We're here to answer anything, elder care planning. If it deals with your personal finances, we're here to help. And the purpose of this show, of the Financial Consulate, is to demonstrate what we believe a true professional advisor should be, like a doctor of personal finance, and try to minimize conflicts of interest between the client and the advisor as much as possible. If you want to call in and ask your personal question, direct the conversation tonight, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. 922-6680. There are a few lines open right now. I'm going to go to Gene in Columbia. Gene, how can we help you?
Hey, Drew, it's getting back to tax filing season, and the more I think about what's going to happen with my state filing, I get angrier and angrier.
Well, we can't do that, my friend.
Is there anything the legislature could do that would make anything retroactive once all, you know...
There are plenty of things they could do, Gene, but they're not going
to
do it.
To make it retroactive.
They're not going to. They're not going to do it. You know they're not going
to
do it.
What if several hundred thousand Marylanders decide not to send in their taxes?
The simple answer to the equation would have been that if you have more than, say, $10,000 of itemized deductions or whatever the case may be, you could itemize regardless if you did or not on your federal return, and that would have just solved the equation. You know, they could have just set a number that was in line with what the typical itemizer was doing last year. Instead, they come out with this phony baloney stuff that they're going to give a higher standard deduction to all Marylanders so that you spread the wealth and not just to you greedy, rich itemizers on the tax return.
Well,
I mean, that
it
was
used
such...
to be that whatever a state withholdings you gave, let them have or gave them on estimated state withholdings, you couldn't deduct that anyway on your state.
That's true.
Deducted it on your federal, that was factored out when you did your state.
No, absolutely. But
yeah,
still,
so
your
Social Security.
But still, your other itemized deductions, your interest, your charitable contributions, your property taxes were not subtracted out, and your medical still would add up to more than the $5,000 married they're offering now and $2,500 single. So, you know, it's not. It's not like they're just phony baloney, a bunch of people, you know. And you just wait though. When the Democrats, if the Democrats take over in 2020, you think it's bad what they're doing to us in Maryland? Watch what these guys will do to us as a national, federal government. And I hope American people are smart enough to know that you don't want Democrats in office anytime soon because they're hell bent on raising our taxes like we've never experienced in quite a few years.
You know, I'm scratching my head because there was an NPR report about the state of Mississippi. And just coincidentally, they said there are over 500 bridges in Mississippi that cannot be used because even for first responders or 911 calls, because they're in such terrible thing. And then it dawned on me that Mississippi is one of the lowest tax states. So, you know, how do you juxtapose that to what you just said?
Well, you know, first off, there's a ton of money that's collected in gas taxes in almost every state that is supposed to be used for supporting the road system. So, you know, you have to ask those Mississippi legislators what they're thinking about with whatever gas tax they have collected. And why weren't they maintaining their roads and their bridges and things of that sort? So, and I understand. I got another caller on the line.
Thank you.
I got to go, buddy. Thanks for giving me some time. I'm going to Lee in North Baltimore. Lee, how can we help you? Lee? Lee in North Baltimore. Are you there? Well, he gave up on Gene to go to Lee, and Lee's not there. Either that or he's on mute or something. Well, I guess we're going to... Hello? I can't hear him. Can you hear him? All right, Lee, you're going to have to call back if you want to ask a question. I couldn't hear you. You know, he may be sitting there listening, not knowing that he was on the air at this point in time. But if he wants to call back in, Lee, ask a question, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. I'm here all alone tonight, so hopefully you'll be gracious. Give me a call and ask your questions. You know, Gene makes a good point. You know, how do you, one of the lowest tax states is Mississippi, and they got bridges falling apart. But, you know, that's what gas tax is all about. That was what the whole purpose of a gas tax is, was to maintain road systems. And you know what? It gets into the coffers of a government, and the efficiencies of government make sure that it is not used very efficiently. Anyway, we're back. Lee in North Baltimore. We'll see if he's there this time. Lee, how can we help you?
A couple tax questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know this. I got a cousin. He's living in one of the former Soviet republics, and I'm wondering, does he have to pay FICA tax when he's been out of the country for a couple of years, more actually? Does he have to pay FICA taxes, or what? I mean, I know
it's a complicated question that you're asking. So it depends.
General.
It depends on the country that he's in, and it depends on why he's there and how he's there. So normally what happens is, let's say I move to England, okay, and right. I'm working in England for an English subsidiary of an American company, and so basically right. what would happen is I would pay English FICA taxes, but I would pay U.S. income taxes as well as British income taxes. But then the U.S. would give me some tax-free money that I made. They would let me have some of that tax-free, and then they would give me a refund for whatever taxes I paid to England. So it gets complicated. Now, you say, well, what happens to the money I pay to the English FICA system? Well, there's a thing called totalization, where I can go to the Social Security Administration and say, hey, I was in England for 5 years, and I paid Social Security taxes to England for 5 years, and Social Security will turn around and credit that to me in the United States, and then they in England would work out the difference between the money I paid to them and the fact that I'm collecting back in the United States. It gets very complicated, and it's not an issue that's easy to answer without knowing all the specifics.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he's working for an Israeli own company in Ukraine. So I think you have to have a treaty about totalization too, right?
That's correct. That's the Social Security part of the equation. That's the totalization right. thing. And then the other side of the equation is, what income taxes is he paying to the Ukraine, and what income taxes will he owe back to the United States? And then he gets a credit between the two, and that's called the tax treaty. So you've got a totalization treaty for your FICA type things, and then you got a tax treaty for your income tax things. It gets very complicated. It's an area that I don't even willing to venture into. I leave that up to the experts in international tax, because it's a very complicated area.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank
All
you
right, buddy.
Much.
You take care. Good question, though. Very interesting part of the tax laws. And, you know, if you ever did work out of the country, you better understand those totalization things. Let's go to Joseph in Cadenceville. How can we help you, Joseph?
Yes, I am a self-employed insurance agent, and, you know, I usually do my deductions on taxes for business expenses like car and gas and et cetera. And I've heard that a lot of that stuff's not going to be deductible next year since the tax codes have changed.
No, wait a minute. Do you own the agency, or are you just an employee of the agency?
Well, I am an independent broker.
So you do a business deduction, right? A business Schedule C, right?
Correct.
Then you get all those deductions. Whoever told you that doesn't know what they're talking about. What they're referring to, though, is if you were an employee of that insurance agency and you had a bunch of deductions, you were taken as miscellaneous itemized deductions, you would have lost all those. But since you're an independent contractor and you're doing a Schedule C, they're all fully deductible. And Joseph, you need to learn about Section 199A, the 20% tax-free income from your business efforts, and how to make sure you don't lose it or you don't negate some of the power of that deduction. Are you married or single?
I'm married.
Married. Do you and your spouse make more than $300,000 a year?
We're close, but we're under that.
Okay, but you see, you're close. So you have to be very careful that you try to stay under that if you can. If you can't, you better get a CPA that understands the issue and can help you to figure out how you're going to change your business entity to make sure you get that 20% deduction. Once you go over that 315 magical number, things start changing. Make sure you understand all the options you have to get this benefit. 20%. of your business income, Joseph, tax-free.
Okay.
All right.
And that's a 199A.
199A. It's a very important law to start to learn and understand if you're a business owner out there, because there are a lot of CPAs that are just going to wait until you come in the door next April, and it's too late then possibly to do anything. I wouldn't say just possibly. It's almost impossible to do anything. Whatever planning you do, you have to do before December 31st every year. And if you do get your taxes done in April, somebody's got to analyze that and say, this is what we're going to tweak for 2019 to make sure we don't lose this benefit. All right, buddy?
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. Great question. You know, business owners, Section 199A, for if you're self-employed, you're a partner in a partnership, or you're an S corporation. If you're an employee, this doesn't apply. The important thing to understand. Right now, I got to take a pause with traffic, but if you want to get on, this is the time to call. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. Lines are all open right now, so call in now. I got to go to a pause. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I know this. Marshall Tucker.
Almost, not quite.
Who is it?
Eagles.
No, you're wrong.
Yeah, that's
right.
What do
I gotta go. Jim in Catonsville. Jim, how can we help you?
Yes, on my annual RMD,
yes,
my IRA,
uh-huh,
if I direct that, don't take it, but take it and put it to a charitable annuity, would that exclude that sum from my gross income?
So now, that's an interesting question that you're proposing there, okay?
Because I pull my RMD, and then I give it to a charitable annuity, but that sum, in that case, the sum goes to my gross income.
So here's what you're talking about. So that the other, and just so that I make sure I know what you're talking about, and if I'm right, then our listeners will also know.
Okay.
So let's say your required minimum distribution is $10,000. Let's just use that number.
All right.
And so you take your required minimum distribution, and you end up with a net, let's say, $8,000, because you withhold taxes. Let's just use that assumption. So you take that $8,000, and you go to a charity of your choice, and you give it to them, and they turn around and they give you $50 a month for the rest of your life for that $8,000. Is that what you mean by a charitable annuity?
That's correct.
Okay.
And, but in that charitable annuity, I might throw this in. In the first year, 80% of it is tax deductible.
I understand. Okay.
All right. Okay. All right.
So I don't believe, but I've never had it, to be honest with you. But I don't believe that a qualified charitable distribution to purchase a an annuity will count as a qualified charitable distribution. That's my guess.
Well, can I say it another way then?
I understand.
I've heard you guys say that if you take your RMD and direct it, say, as a strictly charity, and direct it to a charity, it will exclude it from your gross income.
True. That is correct.
But if I do the same thing, but say to that charity, I want that as my charitable annuity.
I understand, but you see, here's the problem, Jim. When you give a qualified charitable distribution, it has to be the charity outright.
Okay,
but you're not giving it to the charity outright. You're giving it to the charity with something in return. That's something in return. Now, maybe the charities have worked it out with the IRS to say, if somebody gives us $8,000, we'll equate $6,000 of that as a QCD. The other $2,000 he still has to pay taxes on. And if that is so, then it works. But if it's not, then you have a problem. The only QCDs we've ever done, qualified charitable distributions, have always been 100% just to the charity. I've never done one and have never heard of anyone doing one where they get an annuity in return for it. But, you know, it's theoretically probable, and maybe there's somebody out there with a charity who works with a charity and has been doing qualified charitable distributions for the charitable annuity concept that you're referring to.
Yeah, usually I find the charity will refer to the bank in which they're holding their investments.
Yeah.
Then you got to get the answer from the bank. Because the charity usually don't get involved that deep in it.
Right, because the way it works is, again, back to my $8,000. I give them $8,000, and then they're going to pay me an income back. And then at the when I die, boom, that $8,000 or whatever's left in the account, if it's more or less, goes back to the charity. And if they did well on their investments, they could get a large portion of it back. And then it all comes down to a present value of how much income you're getting to what the charity is likely to have left over at the time you pass away. That's what determines how much of a deduction you get on your tax return. You sound like you're a little on the older side.
I am.
And if I'm right on that, that's why 80% of yours is a tax deduction. And so I've got to go to another caller or two, but you would ask, I would ask the charity that you do that with if you can do it with an IRA. I don't think so, personally. But I don't know.
It sounds questionable to me, too. That's why I called.
All right, Jim. Good question. Very interesting topic. We're going to Wayne in Cadenceville.
Hello. Thank you. A question also about taxes.
Uh-huh.
I just created a living revocable trust.
Okay.
And my unpaid federal government pension and my separate annuity were going to be divided up among my beneficiaries, nephews.
Okay.
But then making out the trust, the tax problem came up, and I said, well, it's better to put it in the trust first, and then at the death year taxes, you pay the tax or whatever it is, and then you distribute everything to the nephews. But then wouldn't that create another tax, double taxing on that money? Because then they would have to pay a tax on the year that they get it.
Yeah.
Income tax?
No, only one will pay taxes on it, but I'm kind of missing some of the pieces here.
Okay.
So are you referring to the annuity if it goes into the trust after you pass away? Is that
right.
What they're saying?
Yes, the unpaid amount of
the interest on that's the growth or income or interest that's accrued on the annuity. So you put in $50,000, it grows to $100,000. You got $50,000 of taxable income. You pass away. Now all of a sudden they cash it into the trust, and $50,000 of income taxation's got to be paid on that money. Is that what you're saying, right?
Yes, and also my federal pension also.
Well, your federal pension is going to terminate when you terminate, and the only thing that'll be left over of your federal pension is maybe your last monthly.
The amount that I contributed to it.
Yes, if you still have leftover contributions,
right,
will come back. But keep in mind, most of that contributions that you put in were after tax money that they're giving back. right? That's why when you do your tax return, you don't have to pay taxes on your contributions.
On my contribution, right. Oh,
so,
okay.
So most of that is tax-free money if it did come back. But you see, let's go back to the annuity question. The annuity question is one that if they were to cash it into your trust, then the trust will have the option of either paying taxes on it itself at trust tax rates or distributing out that interest to your nephews and make them pay taxes on it. But only one's going to pay taxes on it. If I were doing the tax return, we're probably going to distribute it to your nephews and say, you know, let's say you had four nephews, we'd say $12,500. Each of you report that extra interest on your tax return this year, and it's going to come with a better tax result than doing it in the trust tax return, which is called an administrative trust in your situation. It's a long story, but trust me on that. You're not going to get double taxed, but whoever does that tax return better be wise about how they're handling it, or else the family's going to pay a lot more in income taxes than they should.
No, so it would be just to follow, it would be better to distribute it to the nephews.
How many nephews do you have?
Four.
If I were you, I would make my nephews the beneficiary on the beneficiary form of my annuity. There are some quirks that you have to think about before you do that, but that's what I would be doing rather than into my revocable trust. That's just me. I don't like retirement accounts or annuities going directly to beneficiaries. Going through trust to beneficiaries unless I have to. And there are a lot of lawyers that disagree with me, but they look at things from an estate point of view. I look at things from an income tax point of view.
Well, I was looking at income tax and making it easier on everyone else.
If it's just the four of them, I would look at the beneficiary designation, but there are quirks to it. I can't go into all the quirks here on this one-minute call. All right, Wayne?
Okay,
thanks for your call. And I'm on an open show tonight all alone. Give me a call if you have a question, 410-922-6680. I do have one caller online, but right now I got to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And we'll come all ye faithful.
Congratulations, Drew. You got it 100%.
There you go.
You know your music. I know nothing.
What's new? I could have told you that all year, Chris.
That's true.
And you didn't even know that was Marshall Tucker a little while ago. You know, it's unbelievable.
Exactly. You know? Well, you set me straight.
Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, if you want to call and ask a question. 410-922-6680. I'm going to my good friend Washington in Pasadena. Washington, how are you doing?
Okay. Good evening, Drew. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you?
Okay. I have a question. I have one IRA, an institution that I'm getting an RMA from, and it's a pain because it's a minimal amount, and because I don't do any banking with them, I have to deal with the account is stale or whatever, and then they threaten to put the money with the state and all that. Is it easier for me to try to transfer that to another institution by myself by going to that institution's place of business and making the transfer, or actually having you do it?
So you're saying that they're looking to escheat the money. Escheatment means that because your address had been stale for so long or something like that, they were going to turn it over to the state of Maryland because they couldn't figure out where you were or how to get in touch with you.
No, it was more along lines of because we're not you have no other accounts with us, and that's the only thing that I have, because it was from one of my parents, their account, because I don't have any other business, and that's the only transaction that occurs, that then they deem it to be like an account that needs to go to the state. If I if I don't call them on a timely basis in order.
Right. So, in other words, what they're saying is that if there's no activity from you over a period of time, then they'll sheet the money to the state of Maryland, and that's not uncommon, and you need to do everything possible to make sure that they don't do that, and the quicker you do it, the better off you are. Is the account in your name or one of your parents' names?
So it'd be under my parents' name, and I'm the beneficiary.
You're the beneficiary, but you've already had the account made into an inherited IRA. Is that correct?
I believe so, since I'm getting RMA on it.
You're getting the RMD every year.
I'm sorry, RMD, yes.
Yeah, so you're an inherited IRA. And if you had an inherited IRA with us under the same parent, we could move it over in a heartbeat. If you don't, you're best to, I don't know if that's what the bank is trying. You know, I would just go to somebody else and have them transfer and just tell the company you're transferring the account out since you're acting silly on it. That's a good word for it. Silly.
So
tell them that.
Right. So then I can basically just walk into one of their offices and just have the necessary form in order to make the transfer.
Well, the transfer would start with the company you want to go to. So if you were going to do it with us, we would make sure that we'd see a statement from the bank that you're transferring from. We would then set up an account to make sure that we can receive it properly without considering a distribution, and then we would transfer it over. So you don't go to the bank that you're with currently. Only thing you do with them is say, I'm going to be transferring the money in the next 30 days. Don't do anything with the account. If you do, I'm going to hold you responsible for it.
So it sounds like it's just going to be easier in order to contact your office and just handle it that way then.
Yes, but a company like us is going to need to see the statement before mm-hmm. we do anything. So you have to have a statement from the bank so we can see it, so we know exactly how to handle it, you know, to get it transferred out of there and make sure that there are no, unpleasant tax consequences to the transfer. Because inherited accounts, anybody out there with an inherited IRA needs to know that they have to be handled with kid gloves, as they say, because if you make a mistake on one of them, boom, all the money becomes taxable and there is no remedy once you make a mistake. No remedy, period. So don't make a mistake. So that's why we need to see the statement to make sure no mistake is made. All right, buddy?
On my list of things to do then.
All right, 2019. Be a good time to do that, Washington.
Okay.
All right, buddy, you take care and have a great new year yourself. I'm going to Jim in Ellicott City. How are you?
Pretty good. I know you only have a few minutes left. So I was listening to the show when I was driving home. I'm home now. So I heard a gentleman talk about Maryland. And the taxes. So wife and I are retired 2.5 years, so I'm been researching the possibility of moving out of the state of Maryland due to the...
I can't imagine you would do that, Jim.
Well, I think the taxes, let's see, Kiplinger Personal Finance, second highest tax burden of all 50 states.
And that Maryland doesn't think so.
Make the top 8 worst place to retire to. I wonder why.
Yeah, you know. So do you have children and stuff that live around here?
I have one son, yeah. We're living with us. He's 26. He's been out working. He's doing well. He's working about almost 4 years now. So he's okay. He's independent.
Is your income above $100,000 in retirement or below $100,000?
Yeah, easily, yes.
Yours is.
We've sinned. We've saved and worked hard. My wife and I are both professionals.
So you're well over $100,000
right.
into.
The state tax. Maryland, of course, has another distinction of being now the only state in the union with an estate tax.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, that's not the only one. There's Washington, there's Connecticut, there's New York.
No. It's, what I read, Kiplinger said, Maryland's the only state, okay, well, there's a distinction, you're right, that has both an inheritance and an estate tax.
Ah, now there you're correct. Only New Jersey and Maryland had an inheritance and an estate tax, but New Jersey got rid of both in one fell swoop
Delaware,
before Chris Christie lived.
Their estate tax last year also. We were looking at maybe Pennsylvania because we don't.
No.
Florida's nice.
No.
Too high.
Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has horrible property taxes, horrible inheritance taxes. Yeah. You're going to lose 4.5% of your money and so forth. My suggestion would be Delaware.
Okay.
Or if you're willing, you know, do you want warm? Does it need to be warmer or you don't mind cold?
Oh, I'm used to. My wife's originally from Western PA and I'm from Northern New Jersey near New York. So you were used to the cold.
Delaware would be my first choice if you wanted to stay in this region.
Okay.
If you wanted a really neat state that's going to be incredibly cost effective to you, Tennessee would be a credible state. Georgia,
yeah,
if you
have a friend there, yes.
Georgia is an incredible state. If you want warmth, Florida's okay, especially when you're a high-income earner. Florida would be a great state. I'll give you a great website to look at, retirementliving.com.
Okay.
Retirementliving.com. Look on the right side, and I think it says there, state-by-state tax comparison. That's one great part of that website. Lots of other good information to help you make a decision. But my personal opinion would be Delaware, because not only do they not have the estate tax or the inheritance tax, but they also, you'll save a tremendous amount in property taxes and sales taxes, and they're about 25% cheaper in income taxes.
Their max is 6.6, Maryland's 8.95 if you hit the max with the 3.2 piggyback in Howard County.
See, you're doing your homework.
Doing
a fine job.
$9,100 in property taxes in
Howard
County.
In mind that Delaware gives you some income tax deductions that Maryland may not, but it sounds like you have pensions from a federal government pension.
Yeah, my wife and I, we have pensions from private.
So if you have pensions, Maryland doesn't hurt you as bad. So Delaware,
once you turn 70 and a half and you start taking Social Security.
Yeah, I understand.
The exemption goes away, the $30,000 roughly.
Yeah, I understand. That's why Delaware is one worth considering. But Georgia, Tennessee, also great states to consider. South Carolina, another great one to consider.
Okay.
You enjoy retirement, my friend, and you're absolutely right, along with the rest of Marylanders who've retired, looking to get out of this place, and I hope one day Annapolis wakes up.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Thanks. Have a happy
Take
New
care.
Year to you.
Thank you, and the same to you. I hope the politicians in Annapolis wake up that they don't think there's a problem. They don't think there's a problem at all. And they say, look, people are still coming to our state. We're net growth in our state. But I can tell you circumstantially that I got a lot of clients just like Jim who are saying, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I ain't staying here. Great state. Love the location. But I'm out of here. And hopefully they'll wake up one day. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli for the end of 2018 saying God bless. People you love.